There's been a dramatic increase in severe disabling mental illness in the United States in the last 20 years or so.
Some experts, including our next guest, say the increase is due to overdiagnosis and the side effects of psychiatric drugs.
But another theory out there is that mental illness is a form of rebellion against our society.
Well, why do you think there's been an increase in mental illness in the United States, things like anxiety and depression? And have you suffered from those conditions? Call in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234 and share your experiences. Our guest is Bruce Levine, a practicing psychologist, author, and public speaker on how society, culture, and politics intersect. Bruce, welcome to Central Time.
Great to be on.
Well, according to what we've learned, there's been a sharp spike in mental illness diagnoses in the United States. Can you give us a sense of how big an increase we've seen?
Well, a couple of ways of looking at it. One is just taking a look at the disability rate, psychiatric disability as measured by Social Security disability insurance and supplemental Social Security. And what we've got is about a 2.5-fold increase between 1987 and 2007. So, for example, we went from 1 in 184 Americans in 1987 diagnosed with some kind of serious mental illness, serious enough to be on disability, to now 1 in 76. And that increase is even higher. It's a 35-fold increase among children who are labeled with a serious enough disability so their parents can receive payment. You can also see it in terms of how much the medication has gone through the roof. So you've got a 400% increase in antidepressants over the last 20 years. Women right now between the ages of 40 and 59, 23% are on just one kind of psychiatric drug, antidepressants. And whether it's diagnoses or drug treatment, you see huge increases in the last 20, 30 years.
Now, you talked about children, and that's a sea change, right? It used to be normally adults were the ones who were diagnosed with this. What kind of age range are we talking about?
We're talking about nowadays it's common to diagnose kids with bipolar disorder, which is a serious disorder, pediatric bipolar disorder, which was never diagnosed with 3- and 4-year-olds. It was used to be considered ridiculous. If you took a look at the symptoms of it, the symptoms seemed to be like what 2- and 3-year-olds do, very moody and have grandiose ideas. But now, because of a lot of reasons having to do with the pharmaceutical companies having a lot of influence and power over psychiatry, it became common. And so you had from 30 years ago, you'd never see kids, almost never see kids diagnosed with pediatric bipolar disorder. And it went from '94 to 2003, a 10-year period, you saw a 40-fold increase in that.
Now, what do you put all this down to? I mean, is it simply the fact that, well, we didn't used to diagnose this stuff, and now we're just more on top of our game in terms of diagnosis?
I think there are three major reasons. One was considered 20 years ago a radical idea, radical extremist anti-psychiatrist. You were supposed to be one of those if you had this idea. Now it's very mainstream. In fact, it's an idea that's being talked about by people in establishment psychiatry who were part of the creation of the DSM-4. DSM is the Psychiatric Diagnostic Bible published by the American Psychiatric Association, and this first idea is the normal is the pathologizing of very normal behaviors. So, for example, shyness has become pathologized, rebellion has become has become medicalized, diseased. So increasingly, what sort of broke there was a straw that broke the camel's back for a lot of establishment psychiatrists, including a guy named Alan Francis, who is chairman of the DSM-4 task force, was grief being pathologized. So in the old diagnostic Bibles, that people were not considered to have an illness of depression if they were grieving for a significant period of time after the loss of a loved one. And now that grief period, it's like you've only got now a couple of weeks. You could be the most important person in your life, but if you're still depressed after the loss of such a person, boom, you're labeled with depression, and boom, you're on antidepressants. So that kind of pathologizing of normal behaviors, that's one major reason.
And what about the others?
Well, the other reason is becoming increasingly accepted by establishment psychiatry. Again, it was for a long period of time viewed as radical and extremist. But through the work, mainly through really the investigative journalist, a guy named Robert Whitaker, has brought to light that the idea that if you take a look at a lot of a lot of problems, behavioral problems, that really were just kind of mild or moderate and very episodic through the use of medications, and they became chronic, severe, and disabling. So a concrete example of this would be kids not paying attention in school, paying attention everywhere else, really not causing a lot of problems out there except underachieving in school and then being diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and almost all of these kids being put on some kind of a psychostimulant. Amphetamines, really, Adderall, Vyvanse, these are amphetamines. And for a certain percentage of these kids, drug companies say a low percentage, maybe 2 or 3%. Other folks say as high as 10%. They will get manic reactions. They'll move into mania. So when you're diagnosing that many kids with ADHD and giving that many kids the Ritalin, Adderall, Vyvanse, these speed really like drugs, you're going to have a certain percentage of them that move into mania, which is and they become diagnosed with a bipolar disorder. So those are two of the reasons that have gone from being viewed as extreme and anti-psychiatry to really now being more and more mainstream. But there's a third reason that I talk about in that article that has to do with culture and society.
Yeah, and tell us about that one, because this is sort of the most, stunning one of all of these reasons. Tell us about what you think is causing it from society's point of view.
Well, if you take a look at American culture, and you can see this from a lot of different ways, that clearly, not just the United States, but a lot of high-income nations, they have, according to the World Health Organization, greater amounts of mental illness. If you take a look at, say, just take one disorder, postpartum depression, so the depression that women feel after giving birth. Well, in the United States, and also too in Great Britain, United Kingdom, there's like 10 to 20% of women who, after childbirth, move into postpartum depression. If you take a look at that same kind of thing in other cultures, for example, in Fiji, African populations, there's almost no postpartum depression. So you could go through, and then there's another study that was done in 1998 by a guy named William Vega about Mexican immigrants coming over to the United States. And if you took a look when they first arrived in America versus being here for several years, there's huge increases in rates of mental illness, huge increases in depression. So this is a fact, a reality. Now, people have different explanations for what's going on in American culture and American society that is creating this increasing amounts of mental disorders here.
It sounds like you're saying it's us.
Yeah, I mean, there's something that you give away. I guess a lot of what I talk about is there's a kind of myth of progress that certainly those folks, for example, who came over here, Mexican immigrants, they came over here to advance themselves materially, to get more money. I mean, that's a big reason why anybody comes over here to America. But there's a cost. And the author of that article, Vega, after talking to a lot of these folks, his attribution was that a lot of the increases in substance abuse, depression, other kinds of mental illness had to do with a loss of social support. That in Mexico, they might have been poor, but there was a lot of social support. And once that folks came over here, they lost a lot of that. But there are other explanations, too, for why American society, Western society in general, increases the amounts of mental disorder.
We're talking right now about how society contributes to the rise of mental illness in the United States. And our guest is Bruce Levine, and we've linked his article on Salon on the Central Time Facebook page.
We want to hear from you. Why do you think this is happening? Why do you think more of us are being diagnosed with depression, with anxiety, and other disorders? Do you agree with what he's saying? 800-642-1234 is the number to call, or send an email. talk@WPR.org.
You're listening to Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking now with Bruce Levine, a practicing psychologist and author, and we're talking about why there has been such a spike in diagnosed mental illness in the United States. And our guest says it's due to a combination of factors, one of which is that society just isn't supporting us in the right ways anymore.
You can join the show. What do you think of that idea? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. You can always post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And let's go to the calls, the phones right now, and take Casey in Milwaukee. Hi, Casey.
Hi. I'm really excited. This is the first time I've ever been on the show.
So, oh, welcome.
This is a really wonderful topic. I think your guest brought up so many valid points. I think that we are certainly overdiagnosing people, especially with things like ADD. I think young children are supposed to be hyper. I think it's unnatural to expect young children to sit still for extended periods of time. But we do like to pathologize everything now. I think it's partially because of, you know, this super money-obsessed culture that we have. And, you know, if the drug companies can make a buck, they will. I also think it's a result of, I do think that there is more depression and anxiety problems than there used to be. And I think that has to do with the fact that we're such a hyper-competitive culture. I think, you know, our identities are so reliant upon, you know, our careers and how much money we make. And, you know, we're such an individualistic society. I mean, just, you know, look at South Korea. They have the highest rate of suicide in the world, and they have the longest work days. And they're extremely competitive in South Korea. I think, you know, the more your self-esteem is reliant upon your achievements and your career, I think the more likely you are to have problems like depression and anxiety. And, you know, being such an individualistic culture, we don't have very strong family values anymore. We're not a communal type culture where we really support each other and where we have a group identity. We're very individualistic. So I think that can cause us to feel lonely, and it can cause us to feel a lot of pressure.
All right. Well, thank you so much for all those thoughts, Casey. And a lot to go off there. What do you think about all of those things, Bruce?
Well, Casey's right on. I mean, if you take a look at really what's associated with something like depression, it has nothing to do with biochemical brain imbalances. By the way, the National Institute of Mental Health rejected this idea that depression was associated with the underproduction of serotonin. You still hear these commercials, but it's just not true. I mean, if you take a look at what depression is associated with, it's associated with overwhelming pain. It's associated with high unemployment. It's associated with being on public assistance. It's associated with having great losses in your life, financial, physical losses. This is it. So when you think about, when you really want to think about it, get back to common sense, what are the factors in culture and society that create more emotional pain, overwhelming emotional pain, and what are those factors that mitigate it, one of them being social support? And so that's the way I think people need to start looking at these things again. One of the real unfortunate things that happened when pharmaceutical companies really gained a lot of influence over psychiatry through the big money and is not only people being overdiagnosed and over-medicated, was that people forgot about a lot of these, stopped talking about it. And psychiatry, too, and psychologists, too, they stopped talking about these social, cultural factors that create more overwhelming pain and reduce those things in society and cultures that can help mitigate it.
Well, thanks so much for that first-time call, Casey. And Bruce, how much does a psychiatrist care about the DSM-4? I mean, if someone comes in and says, hey, doc, I'm shy, you know, the doctor can say, you know, that's normal, or they can try to prescribe some kind of social anxiety medicine. Do you think that psychiatrists are over-relying on that?
Well, the DSM, right now they're up to the DSM-5. That's the thing that they've used for insurance purposes. You can't get insurance reimbursements, third-party payments, without having some kind of DSM diagnosis. So it's pretty important for a lot of legal and financial reasons. Nowadays, there's a huge difference between psychiatry now and 30, 40 years ago. 30, 40 years ago, financially, you could do okay talking to people and trying to figure out what the sources of these overwhelming pains in their life were and try to help do some problem solving to, if possible, either A, get rid of it, or if not possible, at least validate people's emotional pain and make them feel that they weren't crazy for having these symptoms. Nowadays, yeah, there was a New York Times piece on this a few years ago, that the vast majority of psychiatrists, just all they do is something called medication management, which is they just check symptoms and they change medications, and they spend no time at all trying to understand what are these sources of overwhelming pain in people's life. If they did, it would be obvious that lack of social support, feeling coerced, huge amounts of resentment, unemployment, all of these obvious things, which anybody, if you spent an hour with any of the people who walk in my office who are feeling depressed, you don't need a PhD or an MD to figure it out.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Another call. Laura is with us now in Green Bay. Hey, Laura.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I think that historically it has been shameful to be mentally ill, and to some degree it's still quite shameful. And I heard this statement by one of the guests on NPR some time ago, that when insurance will cover mental illness to the same degree it covers physical illness, then people will not feel it shameful, and a lot of this will take care of itself. I bet everyone who's listening to this knows someone who was obviously mentally ill, never went to a psychiatrist, was never medicated, and just lived in pain most of their lives because they were too ashamed to seek help.
All right. Thank you, Laura. What do you think, Bruce?
Well, this whole issue of a stigma of mental illness is a real fascinating one that I've done a lot of research on. And one of the things that a lot of the establishment kind of psychiatry organizations from the American Psychiatric Association, which is the group, the professional psychiatrists who publishes the DSM to consumer groups like the National Alliance of Mentally Ill, National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, which, by the way, all these groups take money from drug companies. One of the things that they came to was this idea that if we can, even though they knew, and they admitted this, we don't really have these biochemical correlates to these mental illnesses like depression. There is no science on excessive amount of neurotransmitters causing psychoses or not enough neurotransmitters like serotonin causing depression. But it's important that we get people to believe that these things are diseases, just like cancer and all that. Therefore, the theory was that this would get rid of the stigma of mental illness because then it would have parity to these other illnesses. Unfortunately, in practice, that didn't happen. That didn't really work out. So what happened was that there was really more of a stigma. If you take a look at the research, where people are, if they're feeling that they have something that's caused by psychosocial issues, about what's going on psychologically, socially, culturally, that their problems are caused by that, they themselves feel less stigmatized, and people view them as less stigmatized. As people who see, and research shows that people who view folks with who are acting problematically, depressed or bizarrely, that they have some kind of biochemical disease, they actually attribute more stigma to them. They won't hang around them. So this idea of reducing social stigma by diseasing folks, by creating this kind of mental illness diseasing with parity to physical illness, it just did not work.
And Bruce, we talked about putting some of the onus on society for not supporting us. People are more isolated and traditional structures of support have broken down, like church and communities. But how much of us is just down to us? Because we're a culture now that wants things to be fixed with a pill. We want it to be that easy. I mean, it could be a chicken or the egg thing.
Right.
Maybe we didn't create that desire in ourselves. Maybe the drug companies did, but what do you say to
right.
that?
On one hand, I mean, we can all take responsibility to not to rebel against them. That's what one of my books is called, Common Sense Rebellion, as opposed to self, that's the name of the book, as opposed to what a lot of us are doing are self-destructive kind of rebellions. And yes, but I think the reality is we have been socialized, we have been through advertising, through a lot of professional organizations, to believe that you could just take a pill to get rid of your pain. And you can. I mean, for a lot of folks, there's all kinds of pills that you can detach, disconnect from your pain. You can do it with psychiatric drugs, you can do it with illegal drugs, you can do it with alcohol, and that's what people have been doing for many, many years to kind of disconnect from their pain and feel less depressed. Unfortunately, there's a downside to doing that. There's a downside in terms of obviously the adverse effects of these drugs, and you build up tolerance and need more and more. But there's a political downside too. If everybody is just taking a pain to take the edge off, you have Brave New World. You have nobody. Everybody's just sort of decided as a group here that it's just too much. Society and culture is too horrific, too problematic.
And we're going to have to leave it there, Bruce. But thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Talking to Bruce Levine, author and psychologist. His piece is linked on the Central Time Facebook page.
Coming up, a hearing on raw milk sales in Wisconsin on Central Time on the Ideas Network.